are listening to The Nature of Things on WRVO. This essay originally aired on February 26, 1993.
It was in 1936, when I was just 12 years old, that I first fell under the spell of Donald Kollross Peattie. I think it was that year his Almanac for Moderns became a Book of the Month Club selection. That may be how I acquired it, or it may have been loaned to me by the wife of our school superintendent, who was unfailing as my parents and our local librarian in seeing that I read the right things. What that book did for me was supply a framework for my understanding of the oneness of nature. Despite browsings in Thoreau and Burroughs and Seton, I hadn't quite caught on to this nicety. Most of what I read, bird books were about birds, mammal books were about mammals, and flower books were about flowers. Of course, I knew that birds ate insects and seeds, that some mammals ate birds and other mammals, and that the broad base of both had to be vegetarian. But until Peattie, it never occurred to me that there might actually be benefits to the victims in all of this predator-prey dynamics. I now call this the refining process in nature, that mechanism by which the great reproductive potential of living things is bridled and kept within the capacity of the environment to support life. Peattie accomplished this by short, insightful daily paragraphs, occasionally allowing a topic to occupy several days running. For me, these musings were a growth generator because, though scientific at their base, they were often philosophical and or lyrical, and, of course, they were current, which Thoreau and Burroughs were not. I wasn't really aware of the seminal influence Peattie had on me until I encountered a paperback reprint of the Almanac for Moderns in the Baltimore Woods Library. This reprint was copyrighted 1980, whereas the original hardcover was 1935. As I began to get into this book again, I could actually remember having read some of those essays before, even though I know I haven't seen the book since my college days just after World War II. Before Peattie, I had found inspiration in the lyrical essays of Archibald Rutledge. But here was Peattie, a scientist, daring to be a prose stylist. When in my college days at Cornell, I became aware of Aldo Leopold's Sand County Almanac, it seemed at first like an encore or a reprise of Peattie. But Leopold offered some things I didn't see in Peattie. Leopold was a visionary, a seer, who assaulted my psyche with his plain talk advocacy. He, too, possessed exceptional literary skills, but his imagery was plowshare and crosscut saw inspired. He spoke for the wild things, showing that they, too, were citizens of the world I considered my own. Even today, Leopold's meter and format seems a spin-off of Peattie's, though they were roughly contemporary, and I have never seen a reference to Peattie and Leopold. Another fine book by Peattie, Singing in the Wilderness, was published by Putnam in 1935, and Green Laurels, some excellent profiles of naturalists through the ages, appeared the next year. Peattie may be best known for his two volumes on the natural history of trees, published in 1948 and 1950. I mention this all because some readers and listeners have asked me how I acquired my bent for cultural and political implication in the events of nature. I've always credited my parents first, then Leopold and Thoreau. In rereading An Almanac for Moderns, I found myself saying a number of times, "So that's where I got that idea." It's sobering to learn that a perception I've always claimed as my own may have come directly from a book I read in 1936, and to further realize that the concept hasn't grown much since. I wish I could get people to go back to Peattie and Leopold to see that many ideas and values and understandings we feel we've just discovered were in the musings and predictions of these men, both of whom did most of their writing before World War II. There's a tendency to view the dreaded environmentalist as overly emotional and extreme. I don't see much extremism and emotionalism in the ecologists I know. Their principal intellectual bent seems to be to view the environment as an energy machine consisting of inputs, shunts, or bypasses, and output components. And in the final analysis, the products of natural synthesis become the raw materials of the next cycle. If we degrade the raw materials or clog up parts of the machinery, the product will change, and not for the better. Pollution, erosion, and overconsumption degrade the raw materials and clog the machinery. And as always, in a system so exquisitely balanced, it's garbage in and garbage out. Petey's and Leopold's message all those years ago could be boiled down to two ideas. We're making too much garbage and pretending it's something else. That's one. The other one is, our children deserve something better than the refuge of our excess. Well, that's all I have for today. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.